Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, May 6th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Gandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says international development partners should channel aid through the government because Harare will not be held accountable for missing or abused funds.
At the end of the day, I want to be able to thank you for the assistance, but I can only do so if I know whether that assistance is coming to the country, where it is gone, and how it has been utilized.
Deputy President Emmerson Mnangagwa says efforts to locate a missing journalist and democracy activist Itai Dzamarais have so far failed to produce results.
And a South African-based civic group sets up a program to assist immigrants facing arrest and deportation from South Africa to recover their employment benefits and household property.
The South African labor laws protect people whether they are legal or not legal, and the Department of Labor has got an override role over that issue. We are still in the process of handling cases. People have approached us.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa today told international development partners to channel aid through the government, saying Harare will not be held accountable for funds provided through an official means if anything went wrong. Ivan Chifera has details from the capital.
Chinamasa told an inaugural Government of Zimbabwe and Development Partners meeting called to review the country's aid coordination architecture that it is difficult for the government to thank the partners for assistance it's not aware of. The donor community has over the past decade largely avoided channeling aid funding through the government, with most funds being given to international or United Nations agencies and civil groups.
We can in future channel development assistance through the vote of credit so that we are able to plan more effectively and more efficiently and when we are doing our budget planning. And again, let me emphasize, at the end of the day, I want to be able to thank you for the assistance, but I can only do so if I know whether that assistance is coming to the country, where it is gone, and how it has been utilized. If I don't know it, if it's not been channeled through, and I don't even know that it has been made, and the area where it's being put probably is not one of our priorities, don't blame me if I can't say thank you.
Chinamasa says today's dialogue is aimed at establishing a transparent way in which aid is channeled and used. He said the government will ensure aid funding received from its partners is effectively utilized and that there is no abuse.
Government aims to put in place a transparent aid and development assistance coordination framework that would significantly improve the effectiveness of development assistance, build transparency, lead towards new levels of engagement and mutual accountability between Zimbabwe and its development partners.
United Nations Resident Coordinator and UNDP Resident Representative Bishop Parajuli told the meeting, strengthening aid coordination and development will improve accountability as well as help in identifying and addressing development needs and gaps in areas such as poverty and food security.
Within this continuous effort, we are aiming to support and address some major and persistent challenges remained, with the stubbornly high level of poverty at 63% nationally and 76% in rural area, and help build resilience to more firmly address root causes of poverty and inequalities and other continued challenges.
Parajuli says strong aid coordination will provide a robust platform to achieve development. This, he says, has been demonstrated through the Zimbabwe United Nations Development Assistance Framework, which, he says, has achieved enormous results, such as doubling the immunization rate of children under 5 and the successful completion of the constitution-making process. Following Zimbabwe's fallout with the international community, most donor funds were channeled through local non-governmental organizations, some of which are now being accused of abusing millions of dollars they received. But following the lifting of some of the sanctions targeting Zimbabwe by the European Union, some organizations such as the EU will provide $270 million in aid funds through the government of Zimbabwe for socio-economic development projects over the next 5 years. Meanwhile, Deputy President Emmerson Mnangagwa and Home Affairs Deputy Minister Ziyambi Ziyambi today said efforts to locate missing democracy activist Itai Dzamara have so far yielded nothing. Responding to questions from Kwazana East lawmaker Nelson Chamisa of the Movement for Democratic Change Formation led by Morgan Tsvangirai, Mr. Mnangagwa said the government was concerned that Dzamara had not been found and appealed to anyone with information on his whereabouts to contact the police.
It appears that it has been months and months now, and nothing has been said by government. We have not heard anything from government. We have not heard any indication from the police apparatus and also from the security infrastructure of our country. So we were asking the vice president representing the government to give us an indication of the progress that has been made there. And of course, also to indicate to us what prospects of Dzamara's survival and existence in the context of the time that is so far subsisted.
Meanwhile, Information and Communication Minister Superman Ndwanzira told Parliament that telecommunications company Telecel, whose operating license was cancelled last week, has approached the High Court seeking redress. Telecel's license was cancelled for failing to comply with the Postal and Telecommunications Act, which stipulates that 51% of shares in foreign-owned companies and cellular firms in particular must be owned by locals. The government says Telecel has been in breach of this law for the last 15 years. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Orton was among many Western dignitaries that attended the meeting with Chinamasa. Afterwards, he explained what the U.S. would like to see before resuming direct aid.
We think that the foundation for everything is respect for the rule of law. Secondly, I think implementation of the new constitution. Third, we think that clear protection, respect for private property, is absolutely essential to get the economy going again. And then fourth and finally, I think a very clear and predictable, transparent investment framework so that someone who's thinking about investing in Zimbabwe knows what the rules are with great clarity and can count on those rules being the same next week or next year.
The U.S. government and other Western countries have cited several factors for their refusal to give aid through the government. These include controversial economic policies, fears of corruption, and widely documented human rights violations by President Robert Mugabe's government. The U.S. is the leading provider of humanitarian assistance to Zimbabwe. Through the U.S. Agents for International Development, or USAID, President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, in Zimbabwe, the U.S. funds food aid, HIV/AIDS prevention programs, and programs to promote democracy, good governance, and economic growth. Last year alone, USAID provided nearly $25 million in emergency food aid.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
The government, which has been struggling to attract foreign direct investment, has been rattled by Telecel Zimbabwe's threats to take its dispute with Harare to the International Center for Settlement of Investment Disputes, or ICSID. Zimbabwe has faced numerous such court actions for breaching bilateral laws and business malpractice. In a letter written to President Robert Mugabe, Technology Minister Supamandi Wanzira, Indigenization Minister Chris Mushowe, and Potras boss Buxton Sereu, Telesel Zimbabwe said if there's no solution to the rental in 6 months, then it will seek international relief. Businessman Tafadza Musarara of Resource Exploitation Watch says Telesel Zimbabwe must exhaust local remedies before taking the government to an international court.
Well, the normal procedure is that they have to exhaust all internal processes in Zimbabwe in respect of appeals. I'm surprised that they've taken this move, but my latest understanding was that they had applied for a court interdict in Zimbabwe to interdict the Potras not to proceed to shut them down. Pending an appeal, they had lodged with the Minister of ICT. So really, I think they've rushed. And in terms of the appeal process, this is what's supposed to happen. And anything short of that is not proper.
But is this not going to be a lose-lose for Zimbabwe? I mean, in terms of its image outside?
Well, I don't think so. We are still in a very emotional mood, but facts have to be laid bare. Our organization will be hosting a national debate on the matter on Wednesday evening to give the public an opportunity to hear from the minister and ask questions around that. And I think all interested parties, including the Telesel employees, creditors and subscribers, will also have that opportunity. But what we understand is that with or without the cancellation, we were the understanding also that Vempocom, which is the shareholder, had indicated interest to exit from Telesel.
That was businessman Tafadzwa Msarara of Resource Exploitation Watch speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Reached for comment.
You may be aware that we have close to about 1,000.
Reached for comment, former Technology Minister Nelson Chamisa of the opposition MDC said the government has bungled its handling of the Telesel Zimbabwe fallout.
You may be aware that we have close to about 1,000 workers who are under Telesel. We also have, in terms of the network distribution across the whole country, the vendors and all, who are numbering about 2,000 to 3,000. All those are going to be in jeopardy if the decision by government is to subsist. What has to be done and what ought to be done is to make sure that there is a regularization of the licensing circumstances and agreement of Telesel, in particular to make sure that the shareholding structure is adjusted according to what is required by and what has been suggested by even the Telesel Zimbabwe, that workers are going to be given an employee share ownership plan. Which share ownership plan is?
The company, we also understand, is threatening to take the matter before the International Center for Settlement of Investment Disputes. What does this mean for Zimbabwe's future investment?
Well, this is the advice we're giving to the minister, that it does not help our situation. Companies are folding on account of poor economic performance, the political environment that is not conducive, the investment environment that is not conducive, the ease-to-do-business environment that is not conducive. All the indicators when it comes to a conducive environment for the holding of an effective and successful, profitable business enterprise are not there. And of course, those indicators are quite negative. For that reason, there is need for the government to correct the perception out there that we are here as people who raid international investment, who raid investments that have been put in the country where there's no security of investment, there's no security of capital. As you know, capital hates noise. As you know, investment doesn't want clutter. Investment doesn't want terrorism. This is what is going to be the biggest challenge with our situation. We can't convince any other investor if we cannot manage and contain the investors we have.
That was former Technology Minister Nelson Chamisa of the opposition MDC speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
The MDCT says it will spare no efforts in its opposition to plans by the local government to introduce prepaid water meters in towns and cities. In a statement today, the party said local government minister Ignatius Chombo is pushing ahead with his plans in Harare while sidelining its councillors. Residents in the capital, Bulawayo, and elsewhere have voiced their opposition to the prepaid meters. Harare Residents Trust Director Precious Shumba says residents must not be forced to pay for water they have not yet used.
The prepaid water meters will not resolve availability of water. The prepaid water meters will not resolve the realization of the right to water as enshrined in the Constitution, Section 77. The citizens have not been fully consulted. The citizens have the right to water, and the progressive realization of this right cannot be compromised because some officials are covering up for their corruption. The Auditor General was very clear in her report released October 2014 that there is massive corruption in the covering up through the DIQ billing system. So we are saying as Harare Residents Trust, the city of Harare must first address the priorities that have been identified by residents and address the loopholes and shortcomings observed and articulated by the Auditor General of Zimbabwe.
But the councils are saying, Mr. Shumba, that this system will force people to pay up because most people are not paying their bills. Is that not a fair argument?
That is a foolish argument if you want to know. Residents do not have to pay for services that have not been rendered. In most communities, they don't receive municipal water. So why should they pay for water? The bills are composite. Residents are paying for refuse collection. Residents are paying their property tax. Residents are paying their administrative charges because they don't have the title deeds in some cases. They are paying for consumption charges. They are paying fixed water charges. What is it that the council wants? The council is desperate to pay out the huge salaries to senior management.
That was Harare Residents Trust Director Precious Shumba on the line from Harare.
Direct from Washington, the voice of America, VOA.
Coming up,
the Diaspora Forum with Gibbs Dube.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
French air accident investigators say the co-pilot who deliberately brought down a Germanwings flight in the French Alps in March, killing 150 people, had tried a controlled descent on an earlier flight on the same day.
The Obama administration has taken another step forward in its efforts to normalize relations with Cuba by restoring commercial ferry services between the former Cold War rivals.
And U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in the Horn of Africa nation of Djibouti to meet with government officials and with U.S. military officials based in the former French colony.
A Zimbabwean Atina Wedu Mupiwa, who struggled to raise money for school fees in Nyanga, Manicaland province, due to poverty but managed to get a scholarship to study in USA, has passed his studies at Berea College with flying colors. Mupiwa, who graduated a few days ago after majoring in computer and information science and mathematics, received three awards for his sterling performance in class. He has since been offered a job by international banking giant Goldman Sachs. Google and Microsoft are also eyeing him. In contrast, the situation is tough back home for students like Dumisani Muyambo Machiri Nzise of Great Zimbabwe University and his colleagues who say they are failing to raise money to buy learning materials. Studio 7's Gibbs Dube speaks with Mpiwa and Machiri Nzise on tertiary education in America and challenges faced by college and university students in Zimbabwe. Mupiwa, who is a recipient of the United States Students Achievers Program, says his rise to the top has been made possible by the education he received in America.
I graduated with a double major. Both of them were honors, BA in Computer and Information Science and BA in Mathematics, with a concentration in computational math. I come from rural Nyanga. I attended like two primary schools, like close to the Mozambican border. I also went to Nyangan High School, where I did my Form 1, Form 4, and part of my A-level. I then switched schools and went to St. Mary's High, where I did mathematics, physics, and chemistry. At every level, I was actually changing and trying to adapt to the new situation because I always wanted to do sciences. But then the schools that I attended before high school, like before I went for my A-levels, had no sciences at all.
Mr. Machinjirise, tell us about what you are doing back home, and are you getting quality education or is just education?
Yeah, right now in Zimbabwe, let me say, it's quality education, but not 100%. We are having so many challenges as far as education is concerned, tertiary education. As you can see, the economy of Zimbabwe is deteriorating, or the economy of Zimbabwe doesn't back enough tertiary education. For example, right now we have some challenges of school fees, the economy, our parents don't even trade enough money. Some of them, they are being estranged. Some of them, they are selling airtime, selling bananas, trying to make things work.
Let's get back to you, Mr. Mupiwa. So comparing what you experienced in Zimbabwe and what you gained here in terms of tertiary education, tell us the kind of difference that you think there is between the two nations.
Zimbabwean education, I feel like, is too prescriptive. When you go to school, you have all kinds of theory. You receive the education, but then we tend to lack in as far as resources are concerned. For example, if you are doing computer science, you might really know all the theory and all the information, but when it actually gets to doing the real stuff, then there's a difference. Here we tend to take the pragmatic approach to education. So we start with actually trying to do things as they are done in the real world. Then after that, we tend to go and try to study theory as well. And we also have opportunities here to actually have internships as many as you want. Last summer, I had an opportunity to intern with a big investment bank, one of the biggest, actually, Goldman Sachs. I also got a full-time offer there.
Mr. Machinjirise, you are hearing what Mr. Mupiwa is saying. So compare it to Zimbabwe, how is it, you know?
Yeah, Mr. Mupiwa is giving a very good difference. Yeah, there's a difference between American education and Zimbabwean education in that right now we are having some challenges. For example, if you are going to the third year, you'd be expected to be attached somewhere. But the problem is a lot of industries, they have closed.
What does it mean, Mr. Mupiwa? This gentleman is saying that you have to go for attachment or internship just for the sake of it. What is the impact, you know, on somebody's life there?
When you have an internship, it kind of gives you an outside experience, what it really means to be outside in the world. So you get to learn on the job. You also get to experience what you want to do after you finish school, whether you want to go to graduate school, or you just want to go out there and find a job. So you may realize that after an internship, you'll be able to go back to school here in the USA. In Zimbabwe, when you get an attachment, when you go back to school, you are just graduating.
When we look at the kind of life that is in Zimbabwe, Mr. Machinjirise, it appears as if maybe after attachment, after doing school and all those kind of things, you become jobless. So what happens next?
Yeah, nothing. We just after school, after completion of after graduation, nothing to do. Some of the guys, they run away to South Africa to find some greener pastures. Some who are a bit privileged, they may go outside overseas to get some jobs. But some of us who are less privileged, it'd be hell, man. We won't be able to secure any kind of form of job besides self-employment, selling airtime, newspapers, bananas, and whatever, engagement of such kind of self-employment. So it's just graduating, and hopefully that one day things will go well.
That was Dumisani Muyambo, Machinjirise of Great Zimbabwe University, speaking with Studio 7 from Mashingo. You also heard from Atinawedu Mupiwa, a Zimbabwean student who graduated recently in the USA with flying colors. He spoke from Kentucky, USA.
Still with the diaspora, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye spoke with Dr. Natsai Zhou of the Women of Dominion, which is based in the United States, on their work to help people living with albinism in the country.
Our main focus, we're focusing on three basic groups at home: the school children in the rural communities, the women and the grandmothers raising kids who are orphans because of HIV, AIDS, or any other terminal diseases. And also our other main group is people living with albinism who are considered, you know, marginalized. People living with albinism, we don't include those criteria. Let me say they don't really apply to them. So we will help anybody in that group because I think they're about 18 to 20,000 in Zimbabwe, people living with albinism. So we try and reach any one of them. Our criteria for who we help is basically rural areas. And we try to help people who are really outside the main places where most people get help from nonprofit organizations or other local people.
That was Dr. Natsai Zhou of the Indiana-based Women of Dominion Christian Group. We will give you more on this story on the Women's Forum on Saturday, so please stay tuned.
A South African-based civic group, Migrant Workers Association, says it has set up a program to assist immigrants facing arrest and deportation from South Africa to recover their employment benefits and household property from employers and landlords who may take advantage of their plight. The group's national coordinator, Butolezi Nyati, says deportations of undocumented immigrants in South Africa have intensified after the recent xenophobic attacks, which resulted in 6 deaths of national foreigners. Nyati tells Studio 7 reporter Standigile Mhlanga his organization is working with the South African government to ensure the program is a success.
We are working with the South African government officials, especially the Department of Home Affairs. We are in the process of also getting the Department of Labor. The South African labor laws protect people, whether they are legal or not legal, and the Department of Labor has got an oversight role over that issue.
Do you have examples of successful cases whereby you helped Zimbabweans and other immigrants to recover their benefits and property?
Is at its initiation stage. We are still in the process of handling cases. People have approached us.
Are there many deportations of foreigners, especially Zimbabweans, as we speak?
They are. We learned through the media that sometime last week about 470 people were deported from Lindela. Currently, there are people who are detained, who were actually arrested during the raid that was taking place in Gauteng recently. And there are people who were arrested also in KwaZulu-Natal. Towards month end, when people are due to receive their salaries, what they will do, they will call police officers and say, these people are illegal, can you please take them away so that they can remain with their monies? Hence, the Migrant Worker Association is saying, this issue is serious, we need to intervene.
That was Butolezi Nyati, National Coordinator of the South African-based civic group Migrant Workers Association, on the line with Studio 7 from the Limpopo province in South Africa.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about Telecel Zimbabwe and the plight of workers in the country.
To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you back from our studios.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says international development partners should channel aid through the government because Harare will not be able to will not be held accountable for missing or abused funds.
Deputy President Emmerson Mnangagwa says efforts to locate a missing journalist and democracy activist Itai Dzamara have so far failed to produce results.
And a South African-based civic group sets up a program to assist immigrants facing arrest and deportation from South Africa to recover their employment benefits and household property.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.